Hey, everybody. My name is Tom Scott. I'm on the Indiana-Ohio border. We're doing a story right now where we're going to go from the northern tip of the Mississippi River up in Minnesota, and we're going to go all the way down to New Orleans, following the river all the way down, sort of life in the time of Corona. We're being very safe, self-contained in a van here. You can sleep in here as well. I'm usually wearing a mask, and RP, as I was driving out here, you know, you get into eastern Pennsylvania, you see some masks. The more west you go, you see less masks. In West Virginia last night, even in retail, no masks at all. You don't see people on the street wearing masks. And then even in eastern Ohio, we noticed the same thing. We're early in the journey. These are not scientific observations, but they are the observations that I have. You know, the other thing that I would just say, the other thing I've heard a lot, you know, it kind of goes back to our Clint Watts interview. I still have people who will reach out to me. I imagine you do as well. But these stories of, you know, Fauci holds the patent on the cure and he's going to make money off of all of this. It's amazing the volume these things are getting and the kinds of people who send me these things. You know, what I would say is it seems like a chaotic time. Some of my observations seem to suggest that it's a chaotic time and different people are employing different methodologies on this whole thing. How do you react to that? I imagine you're seeing the same.
So let's do two things. Let's work in reverse order. First of all, I am very jealous that you get to be in the heartland. And I'm looking behind you at that big wide plain. That's sort of where I grew up. My window of my bedroom for high school was the last suburb in Milwaukee. So you had Milwaukee and a series of suburbs. We were the last suburb and we were the last little subdivision in that suburb. And out my window was the beginning of all the cornfields. I felt like they went all the way to the Rockies out of what I was looking at. And it looked like that out your window. And it was a special, it really, I'm so glad you're out there.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. We're doing blue highways, staying off the interstate, being safe, but also learning and just getting to work.
So we watched Rain Man lucky the other day, and there's a whole thing in Rain Man where he has to take Raymond on the back roads because he's afraid of the big roads. But, and of course, that becomes this beautiful reveal, right? Quickly on masks. Why did South Korea do a better job responding to this disease than most countries? Because they had gone through this fear, the terror of SARS. SARS was a really, really terrifying coronavirus from a number of years ago, not that many years ago, that had a higher lethality rate than this. And people in South Korea saw this thing just killing people really, really fast. And they had that limbic, that deep monkey brain fear, like hardwired in them. And then when this disease showed up, they knew to respond really quickly because they had been so afraid of what had happened before. New York City, we now are hardwired for that fear, right? We went through this hell with refrigerated morgues all over the streets and all the stuff that, you know, that New Yorkers have seen, you know, and just understand that you talk to your friends in New York and say, what did you see out your window the last 3 weeks? And that's what they're going to tell you. They saw ambulances, refrigerated morgues, and some of them may have even seen the bodies rotting in the back of trucks because there was nowhere to put them. They will never make, at least in their lives, they're going to have that hardwired fear too. Where you are now, they don't have the hardwired fear. And something that we learn as you become, you know, more mature in your life, you learn, hey, little fella, there's not a monster under your bed. Don't worry. Like, that's a sign of maturity. There's no monster under the bed. There's no big nasty virus that's going to come get us. You know, until I see it accelerating right at me, I'm not going to believe it. And that's actually a sign of maturity and growing up. And in this instance, it's going to get some people hurt. So, you know, if you were to take this journey in a month, Tom, you'll see more masks because the disease is going to break out in more places. If you take the curve of growth of this disease in America and you remove New York City, right? So New York City was half of all the cases. So the curve kind of, if you remove New York City is now going like this. New York City is flattening the curve pretty precipitously, well, not enough, but they're flattening the curve. So here's your national curve. New York City is now flattening the curve. If you remove New York City, so the national curve looks flatter because half the cases are in New York and those are slowing down. But if you remove New York City, the US curve is going up. The US curve is not flat. So those places where you are going to see an increase in cases. The New York's may not, because again, we've been hardwired and learned the fear. So we're wearing masks. Out there, they haven't seen the boogeyman yet. They're not going to wear the masks. But that's where the disease is growing. Yeah. And let's hope it doesn't. So that's part one.
I understand the spirit of, I want to get out. I want to get out. I want to help. I want to get back to my life. I understand that. I definitely have it. I'm sure lots of us have it. For some reason, that the most active amongst those people seem to be the people who also don't want to wear the masks. The irony is the let's go back thing actually asks you more to wear a mask as opposed to less wear a mask. And there seems to be this bifurcation where I'm going to go outside and not wear a mask. Not a good combo. And it relates to the second point, which is information is not helping here.
Yeah.
Okay. Or at least the way we're getting it.
Yeah, and we have to get to that point. You know, look, part of what it means to be an American is this frontier spirit and belief in self-resiliency, and we can do it on our own. Thank you very much. The most damaging words are, I'm from Washington, I'm here to help, right? That whole thing that we've got ingrained in us, which really goes back to the westward expansion of the country. Ironically, written a lot by a guy in Wisconsin, wrote a lot about the need for American going west and then America going across. It's a whole thing about the American resiliency, and we will grow and we'll do it on our own. Thanks. It's part of what makes us great. In this instance, it's part of what makes people storm up the Capitol steps in Michigan and say, you know, there's some conspiracy that's locking me in my house. I'm going to run around without a mask on if I damn well please. And that's, you know, to some extent, you know, you have the right to do that until that impinges on my right of being safe. So if you run around without a mask and you're increasing the infection, it's very similar to anti-vax. It's in fact identical to anti-vax. I'm not going to vaccinate my children because that's my right. That's great. I'm sorry for your child. Your child has rights that you're abrogating or that you're ignoring, rights to life. And now my child's at risk because your child isn't helping with the herd immunity of measles, mumps, rubella, TB, right? So that's part of the challenge we have. Fake news. Fauci and this vaccine bullshit. First of all, the thing I love about this the most, Tom, what you're letting me do with you, are the notes that we get from people, basically the ones that say, thank you for not politicizing this. Thank you for not being MSNBC or Fox. Thank you for bringing me your view of what's really going on in as honest a way as you possibly can. And I know you and I are really committed to that. So I love those notes. And if we can do anything with that, other than just bringing our point of view to people and ideally helping everyone make the best decisions here in a non-panic-based way, maybe we can help talk about in a systematic way, maybe with Clint Watts or someone else, some of these conspiracy theories, some of these false news, some of these things which are probably influence operations run by foreign governments trying to further divide Americans. We know that Republican-led committee from the Senate just said that yes, the Russians tried to hack our last election through influence ops. So if anyone's left wondering about that, let's not wonder about that anymore. And now that same group is coming after us at this moment of great national division. So if we can talk about these things with experts, if we can say, guess what, these are not true, and here's why you ought to think so, other than just saying, oh my God, you're such a fool to believe it, maybe we can help that way. But the final thing I'll mention on that is part of why humans like conspiracy theories is because we like to believe we know what's going on. And this is a moment when we do not have control. We have lost control. This is a moment in almost anyone who's alive today, unless you were alive during World War II, basically, if you were cognizant in World War II, if you were, you know, say 12 and over, 10 and over, this is the only moment since then when America wondered, oh my God, what's going on with the world and how are we going to deal with it? Even in World War II, we ultimately knew what we could do. Now we don't quite know what we can do. So because we have lost control, we want to grab some control. Conspiracy theories actually let us believe we have some control because we thereby understand what's going on. We have knowledge. Oh, it's this government leader is making money off the vaccine. That's what's happening here. And it's an inherent bias. We need to believe we understand what's going on, right? And it goes all the way back to early human mythology, right? you know, and the creation of gods to explain everything. It's the same part of our brain that lets us believe in conspiracy theories.
But to what extent, though, RP, I wonder, is this literal interference? Because some of this is I don't know, common misinformation or misinterpretation, but some of this is more sinister. So the plandemic, that's the one that's been the hot one in the last couple of days, this plandemic. And, you know, people I know and respect, I guess that's the right way to describe it, send me it. And then I start looking at it and I think, well, if you don't know the tricks, like there's this moment in it where you see the CBS Sunday Morning logo on it. I think it's Martha Teichner you see in the background. And then it's another person's voice. And then it's another crawl. So it's like four different sources, like all glued together. And when you watch it, it sounds legit. So I'm thinking, is there some editor in, you know, suburban Moscow that puts this together and injects it into the system? Like, how does this come about?
If I knew that I could change the fate of my number one peer competitor nation by injecting a couple of shivs into their point of view on a pandemic at this moment of weakness, and it would cost me a couple million bucks, as a former, you know, intelligence officer and diplomat, I'd do it all day.
Yeah.
And we have laid out millions of gorgeous Lego pieces for our peer competitors to build together into conjurings and myths in front of us to weaken America. So the intent is clearly there. The opportunity is clearly there for Russia and China to do this, Iran at a lower level. And then the question is, does intent and opportunity mean they're doing it? Well, we know they did it during the previous election. This has nothing to do with who won or lost, but we know they did it in the previous election. We know they've been doing it since the previous election. And we know that many of these videos right now are fingerprinted right back to Moscow, many of them. I can't say right now if this plandemic video use, I don't know that one, is fingerprinted back to Moscow or not, but the way you just described it, it's fingerprinted back to somebody. So let's start with A, it's not true. B, someone has the intent and the profit to do it. C, who is it? And that's where you would probably get to, you know, Russia or China. But it's, the other thing is there's other forces inside our country that are intent on division as well. So when you looked at the armed protesters in Michigan going into the Senate, standing up in the balconies, dressed in combat gear, carrying M4s, wearing body armor, and yelling and shouting down at the people trying to legislate, there was clearly now proven a certain number of people in that crowd, not saying all, who were neo-Nazis and were known fascists, no member of neo-Nazi white nationalist groups. I am not saying all. I'm a big proponent of the Second Amendment. I own combat weapons. I shoot combat weapons. I train with combat weapons. I simply have fun shooting combat weapons. So I'm not even sure where my view is on the right of someone to carry an M4 or an AR-15 into a place like that. I'm not sure if that's brandishment or not. Brandishing with the intent to incite terror or not. But we know that there's domestic forces too trying to rip us apart. So the trick then is, how do we create a lens so we can see this stuff actively? We can be our own leaders. We can see this stuff and not fall for it.
Yeah.
Because this is written by some smart folks. Some of this stuff is really, really good. We were talking about, well, a second ago, we were talking about a video right now of a nurse in New York City, and it's been spliced together, like you were saying. Yeah. To appear to be really damning. But if you go through it, I watched 24 minutes of it, it's not quite sure that she's actually saying anything that's truly damning, but it's spliced together in such a way that it looks, sort of makes you feel like this whole thing's some sinister plot.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, it's tough. You know, I would say that it's a bit like the pandemic itself, where, you know, I operate under assumption that the virus is around me at all times, and that, you know, I can choose to hide or I can choose to go out, but either way, it's around me at all times and I have to sort of act accordingly. I think in a similar vein, if you're on the internet and you start seeing stories that sound kind of crazy, you're around things that just might be that. It might be crazy. It might be dishonest. And I think if you're just sort of prepared for that, you can look at it, sort of judge it for what it is. And critically, it will look good. It's not going to look like total amateur hour all the time. And it makes things really difficult. I mean, I did have this sense yesterday. I picked up the camper van in Ohio, and I had my Connecticut plated car prior, and I was wearing the mask. And, you know, a guy kind of looked at me and gave me that sense of, like, I'm somebody who's a different kind, somebody who's a judgmental coastal guy. And I think that kind of thing, writ large and intensified, is what Russia would hope for. Like, that's exactly what they would hope, is that we become divided and we act in those ways. So RP, you mentioned earlier, you alluded to the numbers. Are there hotspots in America that are going to sort of hit critical points where they may have shortages?
So the big hope right now, that I saw something the other day, I thought that was really insightful. It said, we're not doing reopening because the disease has gone away. We're doing reopening because there's room for you in the ICU. One thing that we've talked about since our first call, and that pandemic planners and government officials and hospital planners and doctors are paying very close attention to, is getting the hospitals overflowed, too many people in the ICU. Why does that matter? It will create social unrest and panic, and it almost happened in New York, and it spikes the contagiability, the transmissibility of the disease. It makes it more dangerous. The disease spreads faster, doctors get sicker, and people don't get the healthcare they want. Lethality goes up, transmissibility goes up. You can't have the hospitals overrun. Part of why we're reopening now is there's room in the ICU for you. That's a horrible way of putting it. It's true. Maybe a more powerful part of why we're opening up is we have got to open up, right? The real crisis here has been the shutdown of the economy. I'm not saying we shouldn't do it. I'm not saying we can't. And I'm not saying it was the wrong decision. I'm saying the opposite. But it has created a massive cost for us. We're going to have 30% unemployment. We're going into the greatest unemployment number since the Depression. I don't know if we'll go into a depression or a recession. I'm actually kind of optimistic we won't. But we're paying a huge cost right now. If 1 in 5 American children is being underfed right now, that's a humongously different number than it was 3 months ago. So we are entering a crisis that is correlated to the disease, but not actually from the disease. So we have to reopen. So those are two realities of why we need to reopen, and that's what we're doing. Sorry, I don't know if I answered your question, but
no, I think you did. I mean, the other night.
Oh, sorry, you asked about hotspots. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Yeah, go into that.
We don't know 100% why New York lit up like it did, but it was half the cases in America. And then another big chunk of cases have been in old folks' homes, right? So if you were to move New York and old folks' homes, then you get to a less panicked curve, right? But still a real disease challenge. New York is unique to America, right? It's very high density, very high commuting public. And if we believe any weather concepts to this disease, which I think we should, it was colder and drier at those moments that it spiked. And also higher obesity and more minorities in New York. And it turns out this disease doesn't lay evenly on all. It picks on obese people, high blood pressure, and minorities more than others. But New York went skyrocketed, right? Will other cities see the same thing? I hope not. I don't think so. Not to that panicked number where the ICUs are overloaded. Doesn't look like they will. And there's tracking in every city right now based on where we think the disease goes, how many people get infected and have to go to the ICU or the hospital alone. Yeah. That's only 5 to 6 million Americans, actually truly rural America, not suburban, not urban. So it's a really small number of Americans now. It was 80% of Americans during Spanish flu. It's like, what is that? 3% of Americans now? 2% of Americans now? rural America might be in real trouble because rural America is underserved by healthcare, under hospital bed, did. So they could be in real trouble too. We've seen outbreaks in Lincoln, Nebraska, Green Bay, Wisconsin, other cities that are places where you have meatpacking districts, meatpacking factories, those are going to be in trouble as well. So we just don't know, Tom, but yes, the disease is growing in the rest of America right now, but we hope it doesn't reach that fever pitch like it did in New York City.
RP, do you have any new information on or progress report on the success of remdesivir?
Positive, right? And there's two sides to this that are great. So one is remdesivir, as you recall, is an antiviral that's made by Gilead Sciences. It was initially built for Ebola and it didn't work for Ebola. And so it was sitting on a stockroom shelf and it's been repurposed for this disease and it appears it works. Works, right? And so what it appears that it can do is it can reduce your time needed for treatment by about 50%. So if the normal course of the disease from the moment you go to the hospital to the moment you leave or die is 15 days, this makes it 10 days, something like that. And that's a big deal. It's a big deal, A, for hospital capacity as we described, and B, because potentially that leads to better health outcomes. You know, interestingly enough, the best study, like the most scientifically valid study on it, doesn't actually say it increases life, but it does describe what I just mentioned. So there's very positive signs about it. So the science is more and more clear that this is a disease that can help with the treatment of a certain degree of COVID-19. It is not great once you're really sick. Most things aren't, right? But it is better when you're earlier in the manifestation of the disease, which reminds me of an important point I want to make, Tom. Part of what may have happened in New York, and part of what may have happened in Seattle, and part of what certainly happened in some old folks' homes, is people were getting to treatment much too late. So in New York, you can imagine, anyone who's been to an ER in New York City knows it's not a place you want to be, particularly during a pandemic. Like they're dirty, they're jammed in, there's not a single nice ER in America. You don't want to be in that waiting room. And so people who have that experience and started feeling chest tightness or had a fever or this or that, probably waited a day or two extra to go to the hospital. And that may have led to a lot more deaths. Message is, if you think you have any symptoms of COVID-19, SARS-CoV-2, go to the hospital, go to your doctor as soon as you can. You don't need to be afraid. So a lot of people were afraid to go. They probably died because of it, or they greatly intensified their disease. Go to your hospital, go to your doctor early. So, by the way, first time I'm seeing this story. So U.S. shelves detailed guide to reopening the country. Trump administration shelved a document by CDC, 17-page guidance to get going, supposed to be on Friday. We have a copy of it, and they said no. All right. So what do we do with that? So it actually is something, Tom. It's like the CDC had a plan, and the president said no. All right, fine. We know this. The governors know this. They have their own plans. So you have a group of governors who I would say are listening to the science, measuring the cost of the economy, and trying to do it properly. I would say it's properly. You have a few who aren't. And that's where the leadership has to be right now, because it's not going to come from anywhere else. But this CDC report, if you look at it, is largely echoed in what a number of the states are doing anyway. And that's good.
So RP, our governor is allowing, as of, I think June 29th is the date, I'll confirm that, but summer camps in Connecticut can open this summer. It sort of surprised me. I wouldn't have think Connecticut would be one of the more aggressive. And I bring up the subject of summer camps. Obviously, it's been this theme that we've been discussing over the last little bit. And I think that relates in some ways to the report that the CDC had outlined, I guess, a multi-page report on their guidelines for reopening. And the Trump administration has declined to distribute it or shelved it, as it is quoted in the paper. Tell me your take on that.
We knew months ago, Tom, that this wasn't going to be led by the White House, that they were, for whatever reason, going to decide to underplay, not take as seriously as they probably should have the disease, and leave it up to the governors to deal with it. That's a fact. We know it. We've talked about it over and over. Traditionally, we're not used to that. We're used to the strong president saying there's a crisis ahead. It's going to be a rough ride. walk in my footsteps and I'll get you through this and we're going to win at the end. We don't have that right now. Fact. Fine. Where can we find that? Governors, CEOs, you, individuals. CDC, a great organization built by experts and epidemiologists, produced a 17-page report with decision trees that says, you know, when should I open youth camps? Actually, the first slide on here, Tom, is when can I open youth programs and camps? When can I open childcare programs, faith communities, schools, blah, blah, blah. And they have series of decision trees that they've promoted on when you do it. By my quick review, I could never question it. It's made by the best disease experts in America. The federal government continues to not want to be the one leading with these decisions, leaving it up to governors. Here's the good news. The governor's plans for the governors I would call responsible, the East Coast blocks, the West Coast blocks, their plans appear to be following this precisely anyway. So there's no such thing as shelving a document that's out on the internet. I'm looking at it right now. It wasn't shelved. Here it is. The federal government's not leading it, but the governors are. So let's look at it. Let's put it up on our site and let's pay attention to it. Now, why would the White House not want to have this out? Because some of their requirements for flattening the curve and having testing mean that some states aren't going to open as fast as would be good for the very necessary reboot of the economy. So it becomes, unfortunately, a political football. There's been a lot of playing politics with this disease, obviously. So that's my view on that. The decision matrix, look, it's up to us. It's up to you to figure out what's safe and what's not safe.
Well, guys, it's we're up against time right now. I apologize. And this is my first day on the road. I'll be on the road for 14 days. I promise to improve the technology tomorrow. We just got into our vehicle this morning, so we're not as quickly up to speed as we had hoped to be. We apologize. But we'll also hopefully we'll be able to gather some good information for the upcoming shows. So I appreciate your patience, and I apologize for some of the tech challenges we had today.
Great to see you, Tom. Have fun.
Thanks, everybody. Thank you.